El Recinto Universitario de Mayagüez de la Universidad de Puerto Rico presenta a la doctora Mariam Blumín Rosa en Foro Colegial, la revista informativa radial del antes, ahora y siempre colegio. Más de 100 años forjando profesionales de excelencia.
Saludos y bienvenidos a Foro Colegial, la revista informativa de Recinto Universitario de Mayagüez. Soy Mariam Ludim Rosa, directora de la oficina de prensa del colegio, y es un placer nuevamente compartir con los amigos y amigas que viernes tras viernes nos sintonizan en este espacio educativo aquí a través de Radio Universidad. El Departamento de Ciencias Marinas del Recinto Universitario de Mayagüez recibió una subvención de aproximadamente $350,000 de la Administración Oceanográfica y Atmosférica, mejor conocida como NOAA, esto con el fin de llevar a cabo una exploración e investigación en la parte más profunda del Atlántico, en el norte de nuestro Puerto Rico. Sobre eso hablaremos hoy en Foro Colegial.
Les presentamos la entrevista de esta semana de Foro Colegial, aquí a través de Radio Universidad.
Saludamos nuevamente a los amigos y amigas en sintonía con Foro Colegial, y para hablarnos sobre esta subvención se encuentra con nosotros su investigador principal. Él es el doctor Wilford Smith, del Departamento de Ciencias Marinas del Recinto Universitario de Mayagüez, a quien le damos la bienvenida a Foro Colegial. ¿Cómo se encuentra, profesor?
Muy bien, gracias, María. Thank you for having me here and welcome, or thank you to all the listeners. We are here discussing my recent award from the NOAA Office of Ocean Exploration and Research. And the work we will be conducting is in, as you said, in the deepest part of the Atlantic Ocean in the Puerto Rico Trench. This is a part of the ocean whose depths are almost 8,500 meters, and that is roughly as deep as the Mount Everest is tall.
Gracias por estar con nosotros. Él me entiende en español, pero se siente más seguro hablando en inglés, así que vamos a escuchar sus respuestas en inglés. ¿Cómo surge esta subvención? What you had to do to have this funding from NOAA?
Well, this is a what's known as a competitive award, and the funding agencies will typically place an announcement in areas that research scientists will see, calling for proposals. And teams from all around the world, from all of the major research institutions, will then respond with their proposal. And in this case, we had to respond with what's called a white paper first, which is just a short two-page outline of what we propose. And then the funding agency filters through all the white papers, decides what they could potentially fund, what they potentially couldn't fund, and then they send out the second announcement based on the success or failure of the white papers. So after our white paper was received, my collaborator, Dr. Manuel Jimenez, and I, Dr. Jimenez is in the College of Engineering, Electrical Engineering, we then compiled our full proposal to submit to NOAA, which of course includes the project description, the budget, the personnel, the facilities, the this, that, all the forms, files, etc. And then that proposal was then evaluated by panels of research scientists, the top people in the field, and we were then successfully awarded these funds.
Como usted dice, profesor, es algo competitivo. O sea, que ustedes tienen que básicamente con otros investigadores medirse par a par. Mm-hmm. ¿Cómo se sintieron que su propuesta ganara? How do you feel mm-hmm. that your proposal, you know, won among all the others?
Well, it was very, very gratifying. And because these research panels are anonymous, we often there's typically not a lot of effort made in being polite as far as the responses, but in the case of this award, the responses were incredibly complimentary, and in fact they went on to tell us that ours was the most highest rated of all the awards.
¿Por qué esta investigación es importante? Why this subject of investigations is so important?
Well, there's a number of reasons. One analogy that I like to draw is that we've have placed 12 men on the moon, and yet there's essentially no one has been in the Puerto Rico Trench. I want to qualify that by saying in 1964 there was a joint project between the U.S. Navy and the French Navy that actually sent a few people to the bottom of the Puerto Rico Trench, but the results of that expedition have been lost. It's a mystery. It was called Operation Deep Scan, and there was one paper published in French, and all the rest of the data is completely gone. So since then, there's been no exploration done in the Puerto Rico Trench, and very little exploration done in the rest of the trenches of the world. Marianas Trench is the most famous. It's the deepest trench of all, and it was recently visited by James Cameron, the movie producer. His voyage to the bottom of the trench was
for filming purposes.
Or less. It was not a lot of science was done in that particular expedition, and his submarine that he used is no longer in service. He was able to use it one time, spent millions and millions of dollars on it, and it's never going to it'll never be used again, most likely.
So you don't have mostly no information about this. What about those that French paper that you have? What does it say? ¿Qué dice esa investigación que hay poquita información de en un artículo en Francia?
Mm-hmm. Well, this was a dive that was made by what's called a bathyscaphe, and that's what we call submarines that are typically unpowered. They're just lowered by a cable, and they're typically just a sphere made of very heavy metal, and they're lowered down, and then they're brought back up in different ways. And the bathyscaphe's name was the Archimede, which in English would be Archimedes. And Archimedes is famous for his principle of discovering the principle of buoyancy. When he was in the bathtub, and he got in the bathtub, and the tub overflowed, and he ran down the street yelling, "Eureka, Eureka!" But the Archimede made a number of dives from roughly 1,000 meters all the way down to 8,300 meters, and there were windows on the Archimede that allowed for photographs and observations, and the particular dive that was reported on in the paper was a dive down to 7,300 meters, and it was written by a research scientist from France by the name of Perez, P-E-R-E-S. And he reported mainly just what he saw through the windows. And once you leave the surface of the ocean, after about 100 meters, the light is completely eliminated and everything is completely dark. And because of this, he didn't see a lot, because you have to actually be able to illuminate the surrounding area to be able to see anything. And in 1964, our capabilities and our technology for lighting areas at such extreme depths was limited. So he didn't see a whole lot. He did see report seeing one or two fish, and he saw sediments on the bottom. And if I'm not mistaken, he reported seeing some trash at the bottom of the Puerto Rico Trench.
Oh.
Yeah, because at one time it was used as a dump site for garbage coming from the island. And in fact, he did report seeing some garbage out there.
Now, with this new technology of 21st century, mm-hmm. How deep can you expect to go, and what's your... What technologies are you going to use, and what are your expectations?
Mm-hmm. Well, typically, or historically, the way that we sample the deep ocean is with a very long cable. Whatever we lower into the ocean, we want to have a way to get it back. And because whenever you throw something off a boat, there's a very good chance that you'll never see it again. And so we've always used these cables. And the average depth of the deep ocean is 4,000 meters. And so the average depth of the average cable that someone would build to do work in the ocean, it's going to be 4,000 meters or maybe 5,000 meters or something like that. But these trenches are over 8,000 meters deep. So it's very, very rare to find a ship that has enough cable to be able to work in the very, very deep ocean. And this makes the work very, very expensive. It's part of the reason why the work is so uncommon, is because it is so expensive to have these ships. There's maybe one or two in the entire world that are capable of doing this work. So we, my colleague Dr. Jimenez and I, are working on new techniques that allow us to work from very, very small boats with no cable. Essentially, we're developing devices that we can just throw off the side of the boat, and they go to the bottom by themselves, they come to the surface by themselves. And they're roughly the same size as a human being, two meters tall, they weigh about 100 pounds, so they weigh somewhere in the same neighborhood. And the way they work is we have flotation elements that are consist of glass spheres that are 43 centimeters in diameter, and that's also 17 inches in diameter. And these spheres act as buoys that allow the device to return to the surface. And then below the buoys, we have our payload, which is similar to what the space shuttle would do. It would go into space and it would carry a payload with it. And the payload can be instruments or water samplers or a trap of some sort. And then below the payload, we have an anchor, a ballast of some kind. And in this case, we're using buckets with steel chain. So the steel chain has to be heavier than the buoys are buoyant. And if it is, it'll sink. The device will sink. And so we put enough weight on there to overcome the buoyancy, to hang it over the side of the boat, release it, and it goes to the bottom. And the key trick is to be able to release the anchor when we're finished sampling at the bottom. And we do this using electronically controlled burn wires. It's a wire that we send a voltage or current through, and that it causes it to essentially to break. And when it breaks, it releases the anchor.
It's a whole new technology that you're using.
Well, yes and no. This has actually been used going back into the 30s when it was first reported on. And it was said back then, quoted in a paper, it was said that this technology allows us to work in any depth of the ocean, and this technology allows us to work from small vessels as well as large vessels. But back then, it was the limitation was the buoyancy devices. The buoyancy devices were such that they would be crushed if you went below a certain depth, say even 2,000 or 3,000 meters. At 2,000 or 3,000 meters, the pressure is already already many thousands of pounds per square inch. And so literally the buoys would be crushed. And this led to the use of, believe it or not, large tanks of gasoline as floats, because gasoline is slightly less dense than water, and so it would float. But this became very, very impractical to have large tanks of gasoline on ships at sea because of many different problems. Mm-hmm. It's a hazard, it's environmentally unsafe, et cetera, et cetera. But most recently, what makes our project possible and new is the development of these glass spheres that are impervious to the pressure. And so they maintain their buoyancy, and that's what is allowing us to do this work now, even though it's very old. It's a very old idea.
I would like to know, we have to pause and then come back. Mm-hmm. I would like to know if you have any theories of what you're going to find down there. And let's talk about that when we return.
Okay.
Amigos y amigas, nos tenemos que ir a una pausa y en breve regresamos con Foro Colegial.
Angélica, ¿y esa retrajila de papeles?
Ay, chica, que tengo examen de cálculo.
El término correcto es retahíla, no retrajila. Se trata de un error fonético que consiste en añadir algún sonido dentro de un vocablo. Debes decir retahíla.
Angélica, ¿y esa retahíla de papeles?
Ay, chica, que tengo examen de cálculo.
El español es tuyo. Exprésate correctamente.
Mensaje de la Oficina de Prensa del Recinto Universitario de Mayagüez y esta emisora. ¿Deseas saber si tu hogar, área de trabajo o escuela están en un área que debe ser desalojada en caso de emitirse un aviso de tsunami? Visita la página de Internet de la Red Sísmica de Puerto Rico. Busca en la sección de tsunamis, escoge tu municipio y accede al mapa de desalojo por tsunami. Allí podrás determinar tu ruta de desalojo en caso de un aviso de tsunami. También puedes acceder a la aplicación de Google para ampliar las zonas. Habla sobre el tema. Prepárate. Tú puedes hacer la diferencia. Busca más información en redsísmica.uprm.com. Edu. Regresamos a Foro Colegial con la doctora Mariam Ludín Rosa.
Y de regreso a Foro Colegial estamos conversando, una interesante conversación con el doctor Wilford Smith. Él es del Departamento de Ciencias Marinas de Recinto Universitario Mayagüez. Recientemente la NOAA, la Administración Oceanográfica y Atmosférica, le dio una subvención de aproximadamente $350,000 para llevar una exploración en la parte más profunda de Puerto Rico, en el Atlántico, en el norte. Según él nos explicaba en la primera parte, esto básicamente casi ni se ha investigado y los pocos datos que hay están en una investigación publicada en francés y realmente son muy muy breves y muy pocos los datos de las observaciones, porque pues los aparatos para ese entonces para hacer esa sumergirse en la profundidad eran completamente diferentes a los que se usan hoy en día. Él nos está explicando que hoy en día pues van a utilizar unas tecnologías. Sí se han usado algunas de ellas, otras se adaptan específicamente para esa profundidad de 8,000 metros, profesor. Eso era lo que me
más decía. O menos, sí,
8,000 metros de profundidad, y nos quedaba la duda de ¿qué teorías tienen ellos con relación a lo que van a encontrar en esa profundidad? Ya, aunque esta subvención se le dio recientemente al profesor, ya él venido por años investigando precisamente sobre lo que se llama la trinchera de Puerto Rico, profesor. ¿Qué hipótesis, qué teorías, what theories do you have related to that?
Well, my specialty is physical oceanography. And so I don't study fishes per se, and I don't study the geology of the ocean per se. I study the physical processes, which are typically thought of as waves, tides, currents, temperature, salinity, these types of things. And one of the things that is of interest with the Puerto Rico Trench in particular is the fact that the ocean is not homogeneous in the vertical. It's made up of different layers. And these layers are water masses that come from different parts of the world. Believe it or not, we can go offshore the north coast of Puerto Rico and we can drop an instrument down about 1,000 meters and we can detect water that we know came from the Mediterranean Sea. Came all the way across the Atlantic Ocean from the Mediterranean Sea. And of course, it takes time for that water to make the journey from the Mediterranean Sea.
Now I know why you study that. It's amazing. Yeah.
So this water that arrived here from the Mediterranean Sea, it was formed at the surface of the Mediterranean Sea. And when it left the surface, it took with it certain information about the atmosphere when it left the surface. So if we can determine when it left the surface, well, then we have an idea of something about the atmosphere when it left the surface, which could have been 1,000 years ago, or it could have been 100 years ago. We're not really sure. That's part of why we study these things. So there also are water masses that come from the Atlantic, from the North Atlantic Ocean, and from the Antarctic Ocean. And these are very, very cold, very, very salty water masses, and they stay at the very, very bottom of the ocean. And so that's what we expect to find in the bottom of the Puerto Rico Trench, is a layer of Antarctic bottom water, as it's called, and then on top of that will be a layer of North Atlantic deep water. Both of these water masses could potentially have information about past climate events, because they have they were formed in these very very cold winter storms, and then became so cold and so dense that they left the surface, went all the way to the bottom of the ocean, and then slowly migrated towards the equator, and always seeking the deepest area because they were the densest water masses, and then some of it eventually ended up in the Puerto Rico Trench. We have no idea how deep or how thick the layer of Antarctic water is or how thick the layer of North Atlantic deep water is because we haven't been able to measure down that deep. So that's one of the things that I'm interested in. And we will actually be trying to measure the speed of the currents in the very deep ocean in the bottom of the Puerto Rico Trench, because that will help us estimate how long it took the waters to reach the Puerto Rico Trench.
So those are going to be very important findings.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. Yeah. And so does NOAA.
So you, as you told me before, you're going to be using these instruments to compile this information. Mm-hmm. So you guys, the investigators, dive or something like that to do part of research.
Well, when we're testing and developing these new devices, literally we sometimes they don't work. And sometimes they work, but not how we expect them to work. And so we test them in shallow water, say 20 meters, 30 meters. And sometimes we will use scuba gear to dive with the instruments in shallow water when we're doing our testing. And but once we get out into the open ocean, we really can't do any diving because the water is much, much too deep.
What's your timeline for this investigation? How long it will be take?
Well, in my opinion, the exploration and eventual utilization of the Puerto Rico Trench will span decades.
This is a beginning.
This is a very much a beginning. Mm-hmm. And we're just starting. Actually, my colleagues and I began this work in 2006, and we have actually published two other papers from our free vehicle work, not our in situ work, one of which was dealing with the culturing of microbes from the bottom of the Puerto Rico Trench. These are called piezophiles, and they call them piezophiles because they're pressure loving. These microbes exist in the bottom of the Puerto Rico Trench in pressures of over 12,000 pounds per square inch, incredibly high pressures. And also incredibly dark and incredibly cold waters. And so we were able to collect these microbes from the bottom of the trench and actually grow them. And I say we, I collected them, and then my colleague went back to the laboratory and grew them. He's a microbiologist. And then one other paper that I worked on more intimately was one in which we sent a current meter, a device that measures water velocities and directions. We sent that to the bottom of the Puerto Rico Trench and measured the water motions for about 75 minutes. And that is the deepest ever that a designated or a designated acoustic current meter has been sent to in the ocean.
So, Professor, mm-hmm. you've been telling me that you have the partner, another uh-huh. professor. Do the students also collaborate in this research?
Absolutely, absolutely.
That's an important part for mm-hmm. us.
Yeah. And part of what part of the reason why NOAA rated this proposal so highly was the fact that we plan to include a PhD student from the Department of Marine Sciences, a master's student from the UPRM College of Electrical and Computer Engineering,
multidisciplinary,
and undergraduates mm-hmm. from the Department of Computer Engineering also. They thought that was great that we're using undergraduates, masters, and PhD students. And then in the past, I've collaborated with colleagues from the College of Mechanical Engineering or the Department of Mechanical Engineering, and we've actually co-taught classes that were dealt with the development and design of oceanographic instrumentation, and these devices were part of that class. We had one team that developed a trap that allows us to catch fish and invertebrates, and then we had another team that developed a device that allows us to retrieve sediment from the deep ocean.
What's the importance, Professor, that the students from undergraduates to PhD students, but mm-hmm. mostly from undergraduates, become, you know, in this research experiences so young? Yep. In their careers.
Well, this is what's called outreach in the proposal field, and the outreach is to not only to undergraduates but even to K through 12 students. We're trying to light a fire in the students to get them interested in science.
What you gonna do?
Pardon?
What you gonna do with the students? Are you going to the schools or?
Well, actually, mm-hmm. we've actually since about a year ago, last fall. We have, in the Marine Department of Marine Sciences, we've opened a facility in the physics building or Marine Science building that collaborates with the NOAA Office of Exploration and Research, and it's called a telepresence center. And when NOAA is out with their vessel doing work in shallower depths than the trench, because they can't go to the bottom of the trench yet, they have devices that allow them to transmit video and, well, essentially video from the bottom of the ocean, wherever they are. And we're able to display it in our telepresence center in real time. And so we have students visiting from all over the island, K through 12, and even from UPRM as well. And they can come in and they can watch live streaming video from the bottom of the ocean. And so far, our experience has been that the students just love it, and it makes them very excited. And there will be, the next cruise will be in September of 2014. They will be working in the British Virgin Islands, which is very near to Puerto Rico, and one of our department students will be on that cruise. So we'll have a Department of Marine Science PhD student will be on that cruise. And so we expect that to generate a lot of excitement. And stay tuned for announcements as to when exactly the dates are.
Yes, we would like to know more about this investigation. It's very surprising, all the things that you're expecting to see and or your hypotheses. Thank you very much for being with us, Professor.
Thank you, Marie.
Gracias a los amigos y amigas por estar con nosotros. Lamentablemente el tiempo se nos ha acabado, pero en una próxima ocasión, Profesor,
Seguro.
Vamos a continuar hablando sobre este proyecto una vez ya comiencen a probar estas instrumentaciones y comiencen a ver los resultados de esta investigación. Así que las puertas del foro colegial están abiertas. Amigos y amigas, gracias a ustedes por su sintonía. Será hasta el próximo viernes. Muy buenas tardes.
Hasta aquí, Foro Colegial, el espacio del siempre dinámico acontecer del recinto universitario de Mayagüez de la Universidad de Puerto Rico, producido por la oficina de prensa del colegio. Para comentarios o información adicional, puede escribirnos a prensa@uprm.edu. Búsquenos en Facebook, / Recinto Universitario de Mayagüez, y en Twitter, / Prensa Room. Gracias por su sintonía y hasta la próxima semana.